makes it. His colleagues make it. And France are devastated.
TSN 1200.
Welcome back, everybody. 9:12 on this Friday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you. The last time they rolled out a Euro, yeah, Portugal ended up being the champions when it was all said and done. Of course, France got their revenge in the World Cup. But it all begins anew today. Supposed to be last year. Pandemic postponed. It all starts today with Italy versus Turkey, and they will play a lot of matches, and it'll all finish up with the championship final, which is actually 1 month from today, July the 11th. So let's break it all down. And welcome to the show on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, the voice of soccer on TSN television. We say hello and good morning to Luke Weilman. How are you doing this morning, Luke?
I'm great. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. And listen, no days off, but I'm sure a guy in your position who loves the game, the beautiful game, would like nothing better than to have wall-to-wall soccer here for, what, I guess the next 2.5 weeks, game every day?
Yeah, 2.5 weeks, a game every day during the group stage, and then it all wraps up a month from now, a month on Sunday for the final in London at Wembley. And yeah, just absolutely thrilled to be able to have this tournament after what's gone off over the last 18 months in the world. I think the fact it's been delayed for a year, and we've seen what life would be like without sports, without major events, without fans in the stands at these places, it's going to make it even more special. Today in Stadio Olimpico in Rome, which is the venue where Italy won the tournament back in 1968, they will have 15,000 in there. And it's, yes, not going to be full and nowhere near the atmosphere that it would be. But that's the first time since the start of this pandemic that there will be a crowd for a football soccer event in Italy. So pretty special moments going to be happening across Europe. And as the tournament goes on, especially in England, more fans are going to be allowed in as the play continues. So by the end of this tournament, as long as everything goes well in terms of COVID cases and that sort of thing, we could be looking at a pretty special moment in Wembley with at least a half full, if not near full stadium. And a year ago, everybody would certainly have taken that.
Hard question for a soccer commentator to answer, but I'll put it to you anyway. I'll give you a choice of either you can only attend and or watch or commentate on the World Cup or Euro. What do you choose?
The World Cup. Look, the Euro is actually probably a better tournament than the World Cup in terms of the standard, because you have these top countries. You're missing, obviously, the likes of an Argentina or a Brazil, but often we get to the latter stages of the World Cups, and they are European teams that are involved. We saw that in the semifinals and the final last time in Russia in the World Cup in 2018. They've expanded the Euros over the last couple of events. This is the second time there are 24 teams, which gives us the opportunity to see some teams there for the first time. Iceland was the darling of everybody last time around. This time, Finland, North Macedonia coming into the tournament for the first time. But the level of play is very, very high indeed. And you look at the best players on the planet, a lot of them, the majority of them are going to be there. The two that are missing, obviously, not being from Europe, are Lionel Messi and Neymar. But having said all that about the quality of the Euros, the World Cup is where it is at for a football fan. If you could win the Euros or the World Cup, you want to win the World Cup. If you want to reach the pinnacle, you want to commentate on a World Cup game. And I've been very fortunate, not on the men's side, but on the women's side, to commentate on the 2015 World Cup final in Vancouver at BC Place when the U.S. played Japan, and to be with Canada in France for the last World Cup in 2019. And those are just really special events. So, yeah, for me, not a difficult decision. I'd love to do either, but if it was Euro or World Cup and you could do one, definitely the World Cup.
Luke, to that, it's country to country. What are the actual crowds going to look like? And without having, you know, full venues, is it going to take away a little bit? Or you think people are just so pumped to see some world-class soccer?
Yeah, I don't think it will take away. We saw in some games towards the end of the season in England that fans were back in the stadiums in small numbers, and 10,000 in a 40,000 stadium was sounding like 80,000 with the way that the fans had so much fervor about them and the ability to get back into the stadium. I think everyone has been reinvigorated with all this, what's gone off, and that just it is going to depend venue to venue how many fans can be in the stadium, but we're looking at that 15,000, as I said today. There are some other venues where you've got to get up to 40,000 people in the stadium as well. And I just think that it doesn't matter how many fans are there. It's the fact that they are back. It would have been a completely different tournament if there had been no one in the stands. It just takes away from the event, the occasion, the atmosphere of the stadium. We're going to see the Copa America played at exactly the same time in Brazil, which is the Southern American equivalent of the Euros, and there won't be any fans in the stands for that, and I think the contrast will be quite stark. This tournament's being played across 11 venues in Europe, which is completely different to the past, where the most they've had is two different countries. But it's 11 different countries hosting this tournament. So it is going to be spread out across the continent. But I think whether you've got the fans or not, the advantage of being at home, for England, for example, they can play, if they get to the final, every one of their games apart from one, when they'd maybe have to travel to Rome, could be at Wembley. The advantage right now is about the COVID situation and not having to travel and not getting on the planes and not being in different countries throughout the tournament. And that, I think, is more where the home advantage comes rather than how many fans can be in the stadium.
Talking to Luke Weilmann, the voice of soccer on TSN. So let's start with the team that probably has the biggest rooting interest in Canada, and that is England. And a lot of people, Luke, are very excited about this year's side, thinking they have a chance to win the championship. But with that comes the pressure and also the history of a team that's been more than 50 years since they've won a major championship. So how do you think they're going to deal with that, and how do you think they're going to do?
Well, I'm based in Toronto, so to give you the hockey equivalent, 1966 was the World Cup. That's the last time England won anything. So it's like people thinking the Leafs have got a really good team and a great chance to win, and yet they still haven't since the 60s. So it's happened before. The big question for me this time is how brave England will be with Gareth Southgate's team selection. There is no doubt they have a more talented squad than they have had in a long time. Players like Phil Foden, who has won the Premier League with Manchester City this year. Players like Jack Grealish, who has been brilliant with Aston Villa and is one of those players who can make anything happen, a magician on the pitch. But they've not been in a major tournament like this before. They're still in their early 20s. Does Gareth Southgate, at home, in front of the nation at Wembley on Sunday, go with these young players who are almost carefree, but without the major tournament experience, but with the ability to turn games and create some magic? Or does he go safe and go with the tried and tested players who've been there before, got to the semi-final at the World Cup a couple of years ago? And I think that is going to set the tone for how this tournament moves forward. The England fans are clamoring for these young players to be in, Foden and Grealish and Mount, Rice and Phillips. The only negative could be with Harry Maguire injured, the Manchester United defender. Will they be good enough defensively? How quickly can he get back? Will it be game two or three, or will it be the knockout rounds? And then the other thing is, they're on collision course with whoever finishes second in the group of death, which is Group F, which includes France, Portugal and Germany. And the winner of England's group will play the second place from that group in the next round. So immediately, as soon as they get to the round of 16, the draw has not been kind. If they win their group, they're going to have a huge game against another team that expects to go far in this tournament, either France, Germany, or Portugal. So after that, we'll know if this England team's for real or not.
Luke, in regards to the pressure, would it not be easier to go with the younger group? And kind of big picture, if you took a step back, isn't this exactly what you'd want to prepare them for the World Cup the following year?
Yeah, and these are players that have done it at the highest level. I mean, Phil Foden from Man City has won a U17 World Cup. Not that you can compare between youth and senior tournaments, but he's won the Premier League three times at the age of 21. He was in the Champions League final a couple of weeks ago. The big question is with England and the pressure that is on their shoulders, how they deal with that. I think these younger players, have shown that they can. And if it was me, I would throw them in. You want your best 11 out there. I think it's not at this moment about experience and who's played in tournaments before. It's about right now, what's the best 11 that can win you this game. And Gareth Southgate will have loyalty to players that got them to the semi-final of the World Cup a few years ago. And it is going to be a very young squad, a squad that really has a massive amount of players coming into this experience for the first time. But Southgate, I think, is a wonderful coach for this moment. He's a coach who has been through this before as a player, experienced the disappointment of missing a penalty in the Euro 96 tournament in the shootout against Germany when England were playing at Wembley on home soil in front of the country. He's experienced the disappointment, the setbacks that come in international play. And I think he's a manager that the young players relate to. So there's a lot of reason to be positive for England. But as I started by saying, whenever England have had positivity around them in the past, they found a way to let everybody down. So not getting the hopes up yet. We'll see. There's a lot of very good teams in this tournament. But just for England, they are in the conversation. They're second favorites with the bookies. They're one of the top four or five teams. And if you're in that bracket, you've got a chance.
Luke Wildman, the voice of soccer on TSN, is our guest. The betting favorite is France, the defending World Cup champions. They're returning 9 of their 11 starters, Luke. They're adding Karim Benzema back to the team. In your eyes, should they be the favorite? And what would be maybe the only reason that France wouldn't get through deep into this tournament?
I'm not sure of a reason why they wouldn't get. They absolutely should be all the way to the final. They're my favorite to win it. When you look at the way that they played to win the World Cup, the fact that they can continue to get better throughout the tournament. We've talked about young players. Kylian Mbappe was the second teenager to score in a World Cup final. He's already scored more Champions League goals than any other player in history before his 23rd birthday, and he's leading the line. And then they bring back Karim Benzema, who's been out for 6 years, after legal complications and fallouts with the team, that sort of thing. And he's back alongside Mbappe and Griezmann up top. They have an attack better than anybody else in the tournament, if they're all fit. And there was an injury concern about Griezmann yesterday in training. Then they have someone like N'Golo Kanté in the midfield, who was magnificent this season in the Premier League and the Champions League. They're strong defensively as well. They haven't got Matuidi, who was a key part of their team in 2018, and he's not made it in, having made the move to Major League Soccer to play for Inter Miami. But I just can't see, really, for me, if they don't win the tournament, it will be an upset. If they get to the final, some strange things can happen. You never know if they're a runner-up in this tournament. But I just can't see anyone beating them before the final. Having said that, you never know what the dynamic is like in locker rooms. So there was a lot of talk about what Benzema's reintroduction to the locker room would be like. There's been some complaints over the past couple of days. Olivier Giroud, after the last friendly, seemed to be indicating that he was upset because Kylian Mbappe wasn't passing to him enough. And that upset Kylian Mbappe. So when you've got all these players together for a month in a small, confined space, you never quite know what happens. Plus, throw in the COVID situation. Spain already had to play their whole under-21 team for their final warm-up game because of isolation and COVID cases in their ranks. They're hoping to have everyone back for the first game. But you just never know right now if all of a sudden we get to a game and there's a COVID case and people having to isolate. It could throw everything off.
For years, I followed the Belgium program under Roberto Martinez, and I look at that group and go through the roster. Certainly a lot of star power in a very favorable group. Thoughts on them in the tournament?
Yeah, I think Belgium are a team that you would expect to go far. They're a team that in the past has had these great players but haven't quite made it over the line. They're the top ranked side in the world by FIFA. They have been for 3 years. They've been pretty consistent under Roberto Martinez. A lot of people are saying this is their best chance to win a major trophy. They just fell short and ended up in the semifinals in the World Cup when people were saying a similar thing, that they were primed to win it in Russia back in 2018. Lots of weapons that can hurt any side. Will Kevin De Bruyne be fit to go after that injury in the Champions League final? He's a big player for them, obviously. Will we get the Eden Hazard that has been brilliant for Belgium and brilliant in the past, who can make things change on the pitch and make situations appear that not many other players can? Or will we get the Eden Hazard that has disappointed and been injured most of the season at Real Madrid? Lukaku's had a wonderful season for Inter Milan, winning Serie A. So they've got an absolute abundance of quality, world-class performers down the spine. If you look at even back in goal with Thibaut Courtois, then De Bruyne, Lukaku as well. The experience of a group that a lot of them were there in the World Cup in 2018 as well. So this is one of those moments where I wouldn't say now or never, because you're looking ahead. The next World Cup with this delay is only just over 18 months or so away in December of next year, because it got pushed back in Qatar. They'll still have most of this group together. But this next couple of years is huge for this Belgium team. Are they going to continue to be the pretenders, the great hope, or are they going to be able to lift a trophy?
We got lots of Italian fans and lots of Italian fans who are listeners. Forza Azzurri, what do you think of their chances in the tournament?
Yeah, when you talked about England probably being the biggest followed team in the country, Italy's not far behind them, if they are at all. And with my messages that I get, most of the Italian fans are in pretty good mood heading into this tournament. If their squad announcement is anything to go by, then they are going to take this tournament by storm. Because while other countries were putting out things on social media or videos they'd filmed or even just press releases to announce who would be their 26 players in this tournament, Italy had a three-hour primetime TV show that included players all suited and booted, dancing, singing, the coaches playing tennis with frying pans and tennis balls, all sorts of different stuff going on. They won the squad announcement, absolutely for sure. They might also win on the pitch. This is a team that was in absolute disarray in 2018. They missed the World Cup. It was an embarrassment. They've retooled. They've got Roberto Mancini in, a coach who has really galvanized this group. And it's no longer the old Italian way. They're playing with a little bit more freedom. They're playing with a little bit more of an attacking flair to them. And they're in amazing form coming into this tournament. They won all 10 games in the qualifying for the tournament. They're unbeaten in 27. You've got to go back to September of 2018 for the last time Italy won. So the hopes are high, and there's a big reason for them to be high. A lot of players as well. You look back to 2006 when they won the World Cup. This is the first major tournament they've had when they haven't got one of that class of 2006. So this is a chance for some new players like Donnarumma, the 22-year-old goalkeeper, who's been brilliant for AC Milan and is set to move for a lot of money to PSG, replacing the incredible career that Buffon had. And he was always there at these major tournaments for Italy. So you have some newer faces around. You still have the likes of Chiellini and Bonucci, a central defensive pairing that adds up to something like the age of 70. But when you look at what they are, where they've come from over the last couple of years, I think the Italian fans have got every reason to be excited about this.
Luke, sorry, the reigning champion ends up being Portugal, and I go back to that final game. It's always about Ronaldo. He ends up subbing out in injury, and you go into a tournament like this. I guess thoughts on them, and I'm only saying from what I'm reading, they think this might be one of the strongest teams Portugal's ever put on the field.
Yeah, and there are lots of times when, in the past, we've talked about, can Cristiano Ronaldo lift Portugal to glory? He didn't have to in 2016 because he came off injured in the final, and they got the job done. It went to extra time. It was a few nervy moments and some iconic moments of Cristiano Ronaldo with his leg packed up with ice, running up and down the touchline, trying to almost conduct the orchestra from the technical area there on the sideline. But this is about much more than Cristiano Ronaldo now. They've got Rui Patricio, a great goalkeeper, Ruben Dias, who was the player of the year in England, one of the best defenders in the world right now, potentially the best defender in the world, Bruno Fernandes, who had a magnificent season with Manchester United, Bernardo Silva, of Manchester City as well. So, João Felix, who's a really good young talent coming through, who's been compared to the likes of a Messi with the ability that he has and the chance of how good he could get. So this is an opportunity for Portugal to go deep again. Of course, the big question is, how do they cope immediately in this tournament, in this group that they're in? They're playing France, they're playing Germany, they're playing a Hungary team who is going to be playing some games on home soil as well. So while in most tournaments, if you've got that group, you'd give Hungary absolutely no chance, maybe this time around, with fans in the stadiums at home, they might get that little extra lift as well to be able to make them more competitive. So Portugal will have to start well. In that group with France, Germany, Portugal, any team that stumbles out of the gate, in the past, there's usually a time to be able to make that up and improve as the tournament goes on to reach the pinnacle and get to your best in the final. But with these three teams all in the same group, Portugal are going to have to hit the ground running.
All right, just a couple more for you. I'm a Dutchman. I love the young players that they've added, but the team appears to be out of form right now. What's the issue, and is there a way that they can rescue it for this tournament?
There is a way they can rescue it because they have that talent. They have a Wijnaldum. They have a Depay, players who have been great at club level, who can make a huge difference. I'm not sure they have the manager to be able to get the best out of this group of players. There's already a bit of a lot of pressure on Frank de Boer, who has come in, wonderful player in his day and a wonderful career as the coach of Ajax, where he won a lot domestically in the Netherlands, but he hasn't had a lot of success since, and even got fired in Major League Soccer with Atlanta United last year. and now he's looking to galvanize this group and get them going. You know, people want Dutch teams to attack, to play that expressive way that has always been their trademark. I'm not sure that we'll see that from this group of players. If they can, you know, strike gold, if they can get everybody on the same page and have that month where they are just all absolutely 100% performing to the top of their ability, then they've got the talent there to make a difference in this tournament. They've got players, like I mentioned, who can make a huge difference in games. The loss of Virgil van Dijk, the Liverpool central defender, is huge, of course. He's injured. But yeah, if they can get Depay, who is probably their biggest goal threat, to perform on the international stage at the very highest moment of the game, if they can get that sort of performance from De Jong, Wijnaldum, you know, they've got the players there, but can Frank de Boer be the man to pull that out of them? We'll have to wait and see.
Hoop. Who wins the Golden Boot? Who's going to be the top scorer of the tournament?
Well, usually whoever goes furthest. So Kylian Mbappe, I don't think you can look far from him in terms of this tournament winning the Golden Boot. But the other one would be Harry Kane. If England are going to win, Harry Kane has to be good, and he will be the Golden Boot winner.
All right, good stuff. Kind of take us through how the television coverage beyond the games is going to work with you guys.
Yeah, we're on the air today at 2 o'clock Eastern Time. There's a lavish opening ceremony happening about 30 minutes after that, so we'll have all of that for you. And then as of tomorrow, we start with a week-long 3 games a day. So we're on at 8:30 in the morning through till 5:30 in the evening. It's going to be fantastic.
All right, wall-to-wall, all covered on TSN television. Of course, we'll have a lot of games here on TSN 1200 as well. Luke, lots of great insight there. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the tournament, and thanks for the time this morning.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, there's Luke Wildman joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the bigger, better pizza. Order online at GabrielPizza.com. Simmer, that Belgium question was all world, my friend.
Oh, man, yeah. I was actually working on it for quite some time. Reminded me when he mentioned about Italy, about that crazy unveiling we had for Team Canada.
Yes,
the
Olympic team.
Oh, my jumping.
Saturday night.
We won award for most boring. but you pointed out, like, to me, it's incredible. And I know we scrutinize, and I know they even talk about our World Junior times pressure. Like, you talk about this, JR, like these coaches and the picking of the team and all the stuff that goes into these things. It's just incredible. The pressure and the excitement. And got to be honest with you, based on England being, a favorite playing at home, and Italy and lots of other teams, I'm pretty excited to watch.
Yep. All starts this afternoon. Italy at home will take on Turkey. We'll have the game for you here on TSN 1200 as well at 3 o'clock. And then follow that with our Euro 2020 preview show here on TSN 1200. AJ Jakubek, Graham Ivory will have that for you tonight between 5 and 6. 9:35, we'll take a break. Come back with much more. So continue along here on a Friday morning on Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
What's this piece of music? I want something good going into the weekend, end of the show.
You know, I was afraid you were going to say that, and I just kind of lost track, and I didn't have it, but this is up. This is Get Going, Get After It, Line Up for the Patio.
It is.
Why not?
It sounded like somebody that's not sure what kind of music they want to make. So we're just going to make a lot of sounds.
It's
going to be kind of metal, mix in some techno, and just be all over the place.
I didn't have the artist. Oh, you know, I did have a song lined up.
Let's hear it. Let's. You know what? Let's start again.
Yeah, let's reset.
Commercials just ended. Here we go.
This is TSN 1200.
But better?
A little foo. Foo is a little better for you. How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. Now we're feeling up and good. Our final 20-minute stretch drive toward 10 o'clock. That's with Steve Lloyd, Steve Bunda, and Kenny Walls to take over in the box. Steve Lloyd is off today. Graham Creech is in with Steve Bunda to take you through until 3 o'clock. They'll take you up to our Euro 2020 game between Turkey and Italy. And then, again, AJ and Graham Ivory will have our preview show coming up at 5. And then She's Got Game tonight, Michaela Schreider and Robin Flynn We'll have that between 6 and 7 tonight, including special guest Natalie Spooner from our national women's hockey team. Okay, 9:42. Let's get to a couple of wrenches on this Wrench Throwing Friday. Wrench to Simmer from Steve for, quote, following the Belgium national team for years, end quote.
Who was the wife that chased down the fellow with the club? I'm trying to remember.
Tiger Woods?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought that was pretty solid, you know.
Well, certainly Luke didn't pick up on it. So no. In terms of your delivery, I'll say well done.
Yeah, I was reading over it, getting a bit nervous, and then I just right there wanted to mix in Roberto Martinez. My next take, JR, and I didn't quite get to it, was Spain talking about without Sergio Ramos. But then I thought, well, is Sergio hurt? And then I kind of read I clicked on his name, and they've left off all the players on Sergio's team on the club. So yes, I thought that's a little bit too deep. Is it Real Madrid, the coach said, I'm not taking any Real Madrid players?
And it probably, if you kind of phrase a question and you don't really know about the player, like what's happened to the player,
like
how do you look at Spain without Sergio Ramos? And if Sergio Ramos actually had have died or something, is that the reason he's not on the team? Probably your phraseology is going to be a little off in that circumstance. So good one that you avoided that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, and I it's funny with Portugal, and I guess I should know they're a good team. They won the last one, Ronaldo being hurt. But for a country that size, and that to me is the part of when we talk about Canada and even about hockey, JR, but especially in soccer, when you talk about weather and other things, like think of the size of, I'm going to assume that North Macedonia is not a large place, Belgium, North Macedonia, Portugal, like these tiny countries are able to develop these incredible soccer programs. Why the hell are we finally just figuring it out? Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's pretty cool when you see that.
North Macedonia's population as of 2019 was 2,077,000.
Wow.
So not a big place.
So the only one probably smaller.
They're also not a threat in this tournament.
Yeah, but still to qualify. And gosh, you think the only smaller population would be probably Iceland, right? I mean, you're getting into places there where,
which didn't make it this year.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
went on the big run a while ago. Yeah. Let me see here. Portugal. I'm just looking at the. I don't have it in front of me.
I'll look it up quickly while you're doing your stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Because someone has texted in and said Portugal has the team to do it again. Forza Portugal. Is that really the thing, or are you sort of stealing that from Italy?
I like that. Okay. And I don't know if this is soccer related. There's 10.28 million there. Belgium actually is 11.46 million. So somebody has either been Googling the same thing as me, and Greece is 10.72, but I don't believe Greece is playing, are they?
No, they're not. No.
Okay.
Wrench to Adrian Dater. And his nonsensical question to Nathan MacKinnon during the post game last night.
Water out of plastic, away from plastic towards like drink box water bottles sort of things.
You haven't seen it, and we were talking about Nate MacKinnon. We played the big clip from him last night talking about, hey, man, I've been here for eight years. I'm kind of always sick about looking ahead to next year. And that was a good question and a great answer, and that's the reason we played it. Immediately following that answer, and Adrian Dater is a longtime hockey reporter in Denver, and I don't know what his question ended up being, but he actually, in asking his question, dropped an F-bomb. Used the actual word in his question.
Okay.
To, like, it was like, you know, at some point you take the attitude of, you know, F you, and use the word, and I'm that is...
Yeah.
So completely offside and unprofessional, in my opinion, in that particular. First of all, it's in a, you know, it is going to get publicized or whatever. I think that's not good.
No,
so good wrench is what I'm saying right there. Don't really understand why you'd do something like that.
Well, and it cued me because I don't know if you even follow Mr. Dater on Twitter. Was Bednar not behind the bench last night, Jared?
No, he was there.
He was.
Yeah,
okay.
He had
there were some irregularities
with his COVID test, but eventually got cleared.
Okay, because he had reported earlier in the day that, you know, maybe he said possibility. I thought he said he's not going to be behind the bench, which was strange. So
Now, Jared Bednar may not be behind the bench next season. That is certainly open to question. He was an unheralded choice somewhat when he kind of came in last minute when Patrick Waugh quit late in August.
Oh, yeah.
He had coached their minor league team, and I think they won the championship.
I believe, right?
Yeah, so, but there just aren't a lot of people that know a heck of a lot about him. There's no disputing the regular season success that they've had, but this is now 2 years in a row in which a team at or near the top of the standings has flamed out in the playoffs by the end of the second round. And you're not going to make substantial changes on your player among your players, the other place they always look is behind the bench.
Yeah, very much so. And I don't know anything other than respectful of. It was a tough spot when, in August 10th, that he ended up, Patrick Waugh did, basically quit. And he didn't have a lot of options there. He's done a nice job. You know, as Joe Sakic looked to his own playing career, and you had Mark Crawford with Jacques Martin and Joel Quenneville. They won a cup. Then Crow gets fired, and you bring in Bob Hartley. Wouldn't begin to know who their coaches of their farm team. And then do you say, hey, you know what? I think we need that next level and a bit of a hard ass. Do people start to circle around for a John Tortorella? And I would assume if you're Torts at this point in your career, JR, if there's opportunities that would knock at your door that you get pretty excited about, that obviously Colorado would be on a short list.
Torts in Colorado, eh?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, and the Crowbird was a screamer. You know, I don't know. I'm just saying that from Joe Sack. And we also, knowing Joe a little bit, you know, he's a pretty practical, easygoing guy. So I don't expect them to tear their part of team. If I looked at this and said, listen, you tell me I could have Kadri back and he won't be suspended and maybe put a little more size on the blue line of flipping out a Girard, you know, and maybe a coaching change, that would probably be as drastic as I do. Because, like I said, I really like the job. And shout out to my buddy Garth Joy, who's a pro scout, lives locally. I think they've done a really nice job, JR, of pro scouting and amateur drafting amongst the best in the NHL.
They are. But as we talked about earlier this morning, they have been able to do this. And Nate MacKinnon will continue to be on an unbelievable contract for two more years at $6.3 million. But now it's Landeskog, unrestricted free agent. Brandon Saad, whatever you think of him, is still a good player. Unrestricted free agent. Philip Grubauer, Vezina Trophy finalist. You know, not great last night, but still had a very good season. Unrestricted free agent. Cale Makar, restricted free agent. And we'll get, and whether it's a short-term deal, a bridge deal, or it's a long-term deal, will cost substantially more than the $950,000 he's making right now.
And the goalie market would be interesting too. Like, if you're Tuukka Rask, and now I know he hasn't won, but if you're ever looking to switch out, but like wondering what the teams like Edmonton, what the teams like Seattle, and already a group, and Rask, I'll leave his Boston because I think he returns there, but between Freddie Anderson and Grubauer, does a team like Seattle go after them? And then you enter in the Edmontons and kind of comb through the rest of the National Hockey League. Who needs a goaltender?
Yep, absolutely. It's going to be a very fascinating offseason, but before we get that, we've got three more series to go. The two semifinals now set, and again, it's going to start Sunday. That's our next hockey game. Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock will be Tampa Islanders, and then the Montreal-Vegas series will begin on Monday night out in Vegas, and that will be a 9 o'clock face-off. Couple more wrenches on this Wrench Throwing Friday. Wrench to JR for mailing it in and only thinking about the patio. That's from unsigned.
I think I'm getting a little bit better.
No. I am not thinking about the patio. I am thinking about golf game, which will precede my visit to the patio. So I'm very honest and upfront. So I will take that wrench because I'm a good guy.
Yeah. And you also got to finish off your patio, or was that in reference to that? Are you in painting this weekend or staining?
I still have some sanding and then some.
Your daughter was supposed to finish the sanding.
I thought your wife was supposed to finish it.
No, this was supposed to be the painting, the staining weekend.
They've done some of it. Okay. I'm a bit of a hands-on with some things, so I said leave the kind of finishing things to me. Okay. And then, of course, I have no time because I'd rather play golf. Yeah. So it's one of those things where it should be getting done, but I'm not sure that it will.
Well, you're entering prime summertime, Jay.
I know. I know.
I would technically, just as an outsider and not trying to cause any trouble, but the fact that you're golfing... No, the fact you're golfing this afternoon on a perfect staining day, it would have... If I was part of your household, I would be a little concerned. This is prime staining weather.
Yeah, is today a prime staining day only because it's cloudy, or do I want it to be sunny where it's maybe going to set a little faster?
Well,
I'll ask that question there, Mr. Stain Expert.
Well,
Mr. Sunset Drift.
I also a tad worried about your skin that I think today's a day you're not getting any burnage on the neck. So I think this
one
is
thing you don't concern about JR, old JR, old white skin, super white JR. He knows the value of sunscreen.
Okay. Yeah.
Helicopter jet engine wrench, please, to those who aren't Dutch. If you ain't Dutch, you ain't much. Hoop hoop. That comes from Evan in the work van.
Surplus helicopter jet engine.
Good to have you with us, Evan. See that, by the way, that Luke Weilmann was echoing what I said earlier about the Dutch manager being the reason that if they don't go anywhere, I'm blaming the coach, fire the coach.
Yeah, it's these programs, and I guess that's the case with any national program, and what do you come in with, who are you, what's your ego, what's your allegiance, and I'll go back to my time in Belarus, JR. It was kind of political in that whatever club team you worked for, you were considered to be that person, right? That was your whole group, and hey, with rivalries and with everything else, and hey, older players, and also you have so many of the older coaches that still look at players and the salaries they make and are still super jealous of how rich they are.
Wrench to the Habs fan from the Tim Hortons commercial who says Shea Weber is a no doubt Hall of Famer first ballot. Tired of that commercial from Unsigned.
Who wrote that commercial?
And Shea Weber's had a nice career, but man, oh man, that ain't happening.
You know how they actually put the names of the people that are in that? So the Habs fan is Lester McLean, who I believe, you remember the 1 year, and might have been more than one, that in the TSN trade deadline show they had somebody who made up songs on the spot?
Yes.
Yeah, that's Lester McLean. That's the same guy.
Okay.
Now, I'm assuming he's probably... I'm not saying that he's making up being a Montreal fan.
Okay.
But, Simmer, like, off the top, do you consider Shea Weber to be a no-doubt first ballot Hall of Famer?
Oh, I don't consider him to be a Hall of Famer at all.
Yeah.
He's had a nice career. Hall of Fame cash, I mean, but...
Now, the guy who I think is just a Bruins fan, the Patrice Bergeron guy, who I've said may have spent some time in prison, I'm just judging that by his look.
Yeah.
I think he's just a super fan, but I could be wrong. If somebody's out there and he's famous and I should know who he is, then please let me know.
So you think he's been a little time in the Fall River Detention Center?
Well,
it's just the way that he says...
On the longer commercial, the 30-second, I mentioned this yesterday, it's the way he says, Patrice Bergeron, leads me to think that he's been to dark places.
You're stereotyping him because of his tats. That's what it is.
Nothing
because
to
he's
do.
Got huge tats.
I'm a big fan
he's
of tats.
He's a big, mean-looking guy.
Are you, like, saying that, like, he's singing Moon River? Like, kind of a...
It's just his. It's just when he says Patrice Bergeron on his... Not when he talks about being the best two-way center in the game. Just Patrice Bergeron.
Yeah.
Just
but that tat is, first of all, solid, but that's a lot of work, JR.
Oh, yeah.
You put a lot of coin
that's
into that.
That's a big
one.
Fan.
Yeah, that's another one-dayer.
And he's probably got the Stanley Cup on his calves, right?
Yeah.
All kinds of different stuff there.
I don't know if he's listening today up in Wakefield at the cottage.
Oh.
Danny Potvin, friend of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
It was
yeah.
on this day in 1974 that he won the Calder Trophy as Rookie of the Year after his first season with the New York Islanders.
Wow, that's cool. And then took a little while, 1980 they won the cup, right? 80
Correct.
To 83.
Six years.
Yeah, yeah.
On that same day in 1974, your Washington Capitals were officially awarded an NHL franchise along with the...
1974
yes.
National Hockey League franchise.
This team has gone on to win three Stanley Cups. It's had three different homes.
Oh, my God. No, I have no idea, Jerry.
Kansas City Scouts, who became the Colorado Rockies, who became the New Jersey Devils.
Wow.
Joined the Washington Capitals
as
expansion franchises.
Okay. I like to be a bit of a hockey guy, but I didn't know that Kansas City went to Colorado. Well aware of the Colorado, obviously, to New Jersey, but okay. Wow.
Hammer, first draft pick of the Kansas City Scouts. So Greg Jolly went number one to the Washington Capitals. This would be the 1974 draft.
Yeah, yeah.
Number two?
Yeah.
Do I want to go with a Nelson Piatt? Is that a possibility?
Are you asking?
I'm asking you to look it up.
Okay. Give me the year again.
1974 NHL draft, number two pick to the Kansas City Scouts.
These do not sound like good picks.
And that's Tommy and Taylor's dad, right?
Yeah, and I may be completely wrong.
Nelson played for the Caps. I was going to go with the strong Barry Beck.
Okay, final guesses. Hit me with the final guesses.
Have you heard of this player?
Yes.
Oh, actually, I think I know.
Hinty, hinty.
Wilf Paymo?
You're an expert.
Nice! Way to go, me!
What do you mean? You just came out with another...
And I changed my mind. I changed my mind and
Hammer,
got it right.
Hammer sent that in sign language or texted you.
There's like 50,000 guys that have played the NHL. I came up with Wilfie Paymo on my own. Nice job by me.
Yeah, and Wilfie had played WHA before that, Jer? Thought he was one of
Yeah, I think he's one of those young guys that went and played somewhere else.
Birmingham Bulls.
One of the few former players to actually wear number 99, actually preceded Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
Could have had a Clark Gillies at number four, but of course the Islanders picked him.
Hall of Famer.
Wow. Who's number three, Hammer?
Number three was Rick Hampton to the California Golden Seals.
That's the reason California failed to exist much longer when you choose the likes of, with all due respect to Rick Hampton.
Was there not something in that history as well that involved former Sens coach? Who's a recent guy that had glasses that coached the team? I'm drawing a blank here right now.
In Ottawa?
Yeah.
The recent guy, Dave Cameron?
Dave Cameron.
Dave Cameron was a high pick.
Yeah, yeah, and ended up being a part of a major trade as well.
Mm-hmm.
A one-sided trade at that.
On this day in 1989, Michael Chang won the French Open. At 17 years and old and 110 days, he became the youngest male Grand Slam winner ever. Mm-hmm. Here is something if you're old enough to remember, you remember Michael Chang. Here's something I didn't know. That was actually the only Grand Slam he ever won. He only ended up winning one.
Really?
He was in contention in a bunch.
Yeah.
He was one of those guys that could just run forever. Like he could chase everything down, but he won the one slam. I think Boris Becker also won Wimbledon at the age of 17, but he must have been, you know, obviously older than 110 days in his 17th year.
Yeah, and also I always remember as a Michael Chang playing forever, JR, but at the same time, he had those great quads and super athletic. He was always cramping up at the U.S. Open, right? The hot nights, long matches, and you think he wouldn't make it through, and he had one of those memorable matches where he could barely get through, but an absolute crowd favorite when he played at the U.S. Open. He would have been right in and around Agassi, right?
Sampras. He would have been right behind them the entire time. That's why he only has one.
It's not Sampras, it's Sampras.
Sampras?
I was shocked to hear that he was part of, now I'm not even talking what you guys, they ended up having a movie on famous bettors in L.A. that involved Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, the fella that played Superman or Spider-Man, Tobey Maguire. The other guy that was part of that, this illegal gambling ring, was Pete Sampras. And I'm looking at him and thinking, I ain't feeling that one at all. First of all, the most boring man on the planet, right? Other than his eyebrows.
Pete Sampras.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got it.
LA Kings won their first Stanley Cup on this day in 2012.
Wow.
Beating, now, the two teams they beat in the final were the Devils and the Rangers.
Yeah.
Which one did they beat in 2012?
Ooh, I'm going to go with an Alec Martinez beating the Devils.
Devils is correct.
Okay. And also to that year, trade deadline, they go into the office as ownership to the general manager at the time and say, listen, you either make the playoffs, Dean Lombardi, or you're fired. And they turn around and call Columbus and say, hey, I got a nice defenseman here by the name of Jack Johnson. Would you send me Jeff Carter? That helped propel them to the playoffs, Jared, and won the cup that year, a little before people expected.
They became the first number eight seed ever to win a Stanley Cup.
Oh, okay, yeah.
2017, the Pittsburgh Penguins went back-to-back Stanley Cup championships when they defeated the Nashville Predators 2-0 in Game 6. Of course, was the year in which they had beaten Ottawa in Game 7 double overtime.
And series changers, JR, things that happen where coaches look like geniuses. That switching of Marc-Andre Fleury here to put in Matt Murray. People said it wasn't going to happen. Marc-Andre Fleury had played 2.5 rounds. This was his cup to win. Mr. Sully makes the change right there. Next thing you know, back-to-back cups. And for an Ottawa fan, boy, to take them to Game 7 of overtime, you have to think, what could have been had you had a chance to face Nashville in a Stanley Cup final?